At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Barnyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Man, what a week. What a very, very difficult week, especially for those of us that kind of grew up in the 80s, man. I mean, we've lost some incredible people. We truly have. And, you know, people talk about these things kind of come in threes. I mean, we were absolutely shocked with the tragic drowning death of Malcolm Jamal Warner, better known to many of us as Theo Huxtable. He was our favorite little brother in the 80s, as the Cosby Show was a big deal. And listen, I don't want to hear any Bill Cosby jokes. All that was horrendous, got nothing to do with Theo. But man, that shook us to our core. You know, because number one, this is the tragic nature of it all. But to, you know, to lose a very beloved TV character in our lives. And then just as we're kind of coming to grips with that, Ozzy Osbourne dies. Now, that wasn't unexpected. You know, we didn't think it'd be quite so quick after the July 5th concert. But again, just as we're kind of reeling from, oh, man, isn't that terrible, you know, that Malcolm Jamal Warner dies down there in Costa Rica with swimming with his daughter. I mean, can you imagine how horrific that is? And then Ozzy dies. And then today we find out that Hulk Hogan died in the night. It's terrible. It is. It's terrible. We're going to spend some time talking about that. We got sports to talk about too. But I've had a lot of requests from people like, man, Steve, can we just kind of talk through this? And I'm doing my best I can. But, you know, yeah, it's the circle of life. It is. But it's also a reminder of our own mortality. And the one thing that you learn from situations such as this is that at some point, death comes for all of us. Now, you got to think, like, even a guy like Ozzy Osbourne has got all the money in the world. It couldn't keep him alive. And at least it couldn't without some quality of life. He said himself, he knew that he was dying. Didn't need somebody to tell him. He was well aware. His quality of life had been tremendously diminished. And they said that he didn't take his pain pills when he did the show because he wanted to be lucid and be able to tell everybody goodbye. But the reality of it is that a nation has been rocked this week. Now, that's not in any way to oversell it, you know, because there have been some national tragedies, of course, that have made us question everything about life. And think about us and our families and our ability to protect our families. But when we lose three beloved people, it's difficult. Now, Malcolm Jamal Warner was recently in the series The Resident. My wife watched that. I watched a couple episodes with her. So it's, you know, it's not like he's just a nostalgia act, right? Ozzy Osbourne had an album come out a couple years ago, Patient Number 9. Great, award-winning, still active. Hulk Hogan, of course, still active as well. One of the things that I will say that I've noticed, and, you know, guys, people are the best and the worst. In situations like this, this is where the monetization of social media for just random people, this is the downside of it, is you have people out there rage baiting for engagement. And there are some people that I know that probably believe this, you know, like celebrating the death of Ozzy Osbourne, celebrating the death of Hulk Hogan. You know, listen, I don't, other than the death of our enemies, right, the people that actually try to bring harm on all of us, no matter who we vote for, you know, terrorists from a foreign land. I mean, I don't think we should ever celebrate the death of anybody, you know. There are a few people out there in my life that when they passed away, my life got easier, you know. There's some people, of course, that have done some things to people, you know, to me, to people I love. You know, it's like when they pass away, it's like, you know what, I don't have to deal with that anymore. Not that you celebrate it, but at the same time, too, maybe you can take a deeper breath. Now, it may sound horrible, but I get that. But to take glee in the death of somebody else that has never harmed you, and then some people out there is, well, they didn't back my political candidate. You know, get over yourself. It's one of the worst things about society today is this tribalistic nature of political commentary that's played out 365 days a year. And guys, let me just tell you this. In case you haven't figured it out yet, you got a lot of people out there grifting on your emotions. Oh, there's these new sealed indictments that are coming out, and this person's going to jail, and this person's going to be brought up on charges. That stuff happens all the time. You know, and here's the thing about that. And I don't want to get sidetracked too much, okay? But I want to say this for the record. Like when it comes to this Epstein stuff, I don't care whose name is on those lists. Everybody should be held accountable. Everybody. I don't care who it is. I don't care if we have to fire everybody in Washington. I don't care if everybody in Washington has to go to the federal prison. It doesn't make any difference to me. I want everybody to be held accountable and to get credit for whatever they've done, good, bad, or indifferent. Period. Makes no difference to me. On the other side of the aisle, if there's some people involved that helped rig an election, you know what? They need to go to prison too. Perfectly okay with that. I'm not going to excuse negative behavior because of political affiliation. There is good and evil in every walk of life. And if you have done something improper, you have done something illegal, and if you, especially if you have harmed children, you deserve to go to the penitentiary, period. I think that is something that we can all agree on. I know it gets uncomfortable for some folks because they've supported certain figures and they don't want to have to eat it on social media and have somebody ram it back in their face. But the reality of that is everybody involved in things that are evil, that bring harm to other people, especially children, there is no excuse for it. There is no amount of celebrity you can have that's going to make that okay. And this is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is not about red and blue or right or left. It's about good and evil. And if you're defending that, you need to take a step back and check yourself. Honest to goodness. That's the reality of life. If you're willing to excuse the abuse of children because your favorite political candidate might be implicated, you're part of the problem. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors to the show. We love Bulldog Burger Company. I love having one so close to me. And sometimes I take it for granted. I'll be honest with you. I think, oh, I'll get it tomorrow. Guys, it's so great because it's always such a rewarding experience. Always. I have never walked out of Bulldog Burger Company feeling worse than when I walked in. I always walk out feeling refreshed, feeling nourished, feeling like I got more than my money's worth when I go in there. Great food, great prices, great service, great atmosphere. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harper Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They make you and everybody around you better looking. Find your own favorites. If you're a newbie, go to the Bulldog Burger first. Just the signature burger. Go that route first. You can't go wrong with that. Like, even if you never did anything else, I think you could feel very fulfilled in life just having the Bulldog at Bulldog Burger Company. But if you want to expand your horizons a little bit, be sure and do so. Maybe get that Freshman 15, the Lauren, the Bryant, the Pimentology, add bacon. That'll put some hair on your chest. And I don't even like pimento and cheese sandwiches, but I love the Pimentology burger. And, you know, I went through this little quest like years ago, where I'd have a different burger and talk about it on the show. I said, I'm going to eat them all. I'm not going to go in there with any preconceived notions. And then the Pimentology ends up being like my favorite. I love it, man. I do. I love it. I didn't think I would. Absolutely love it. I don't like pimento cheese sandwiches. I don't. I know some of you do. I don't like it. I don't like it. But I love the pimento spread on the pimentology. It's great. So if you're like out on pimento cheese sandwiches, don't rule out the pimentology hamburger. I think you're going to be quite pleased with that. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. Kind of continuing with our theme here. We're going to talk a little bit about this. A little bit more. I know this is a Mississippi State show, but this is a unique week, right? I text Brian this morning, and you're contrary to what some idiots would say out there. Brian and our friends, and that's not to say that we agree on everything. That's not to say that we actually hadn't had arguments. It's what you do with friends, you know. But I text him. You know, Brian's more of a wrestling guy than me. I mean, I used to love going to wrestling. I used to love watching wrestling. When Ani was a kid, we'd watch WCW or Raw every week, and he would sit like on the armrest of my chair, and it was like our thing. And then one night I just said I don't want to do it anymore, so he'd watch it in his room. But we'd get all the pay-per-views and things like that, and you know, every year he'd have to get, you know, a hoodie for his birthday, a hoodie for Christmas, Randy Orton stuff, whatever, you know. And I go back a ways too, man. I'm going to give you guys a quick story about the history of my family with wrestling. You know, used to be at the National Guard Armory, right? Well, my grandfather, A.J. Barber, who we've talked about on the show before, was a huge wrestling fanatic. And then Lexi Fillingame was his sister, huge wrestling fanatic. And she would get so excited about it all, like she'd have her little fan, you know, because there wasn't any air conditioning in the National Guard Armory. And whenever her favorite, you know, wrestler would start winning, she would just start beating people around her with that fan just because she'd get so exuberant, right? It's just funny to think about. But one day, my grandfather, who was a minister, there was a match that did not go the way. This is back when everybody thought wrestling was real, right? And so my grandfather gets up and stands up on a wooden chair in the National Guard Armory and says, people, listen to me. That match was fixed. And it's like all the people out there, as my uncle described it to me, it was just like when the Apostle Paul was speaking to the Corinthians and they said, what must we do to be saved? Right? Anyway, they take popcorn boxes, they turn them inside out, and they sign a petition. And then Mid-South Wrestling talked about it on the air. And so they had a rematch. Hey, back by popular demand. You know, the fans demanded it. We're going to have a rematch on air. And so that's how far back wrestling goes in my family. But as I've become an adult, my kids have gotten older, I don't watch it. I don't. And listen, I don't make fun of wrestling because, man, the Rock and Roll Express, man, those guys were the coolest guys that ever lived for my life for a while. Loved those guys. But, you know, Brian and some of his friends, you know, they're still very, 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 very big fans of the genre. So I text Brian this morning. And Brian's not the music guy I am. Likes it, but not, you know, he's not the same level of interest as me, you know. And so I texted him. I was like, hey, you know, dude, this sucks, man, you know. And when Ozzy died, man, it felt like a member of my family died. And so I feel like Hulk Hogan's probably the same way with Brian. And I saw Hulk fight the Libyan, I guess, down in the Superdome years ago. Went to Biloxi and saw Hogan fight a couple times. But anyway, I get it. You know, I mean, you're friends, and it's like, listen, as bad as this sucks, right, I'm not emotionally invested in Hulk Hogan anymore. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and so I text Brian, and he's like, dude, I was like, what's going on? You know, what is happening? And he goes, I don't know. I said, well, man, I think we ought to put some people in protective custody. He goes, yeah, let's get armed surveillance to Ric Flair and Robert Plant right now, you know. But one of the things that I shared with him is like, man, nobody in our generation is unaffected by this. You think about Theo Huxtable, right? Now, again, a beloved character in a beloved show that, honestly, I don't know if there have been more TV shows in American history that did more good things for race relations than The Cosby Show. Honestly, and I lived through the Jeffersons too. You know, a lot of that too, you know, there was George Jefferson was a card, right? And so there was so much to that. But The Cosby Show, it gave us, I think, a chance for us to kind of have some dialogue as people that we wouldn't have had otherwise, because it wasn't the stereotypical African-American family. Listen, I love Good Times. But a lot of those characters in the 70s and 80s were kind of similar, right? And all of a sudden, The Cosby Show comes along. And of course, Bill Cosby at the time was a beloved comedian. It didn't end well, obviously. But everybody loved the Huxtables. A lot of us loved Denise Moore. She was our favorite. You know, and everybody, of course, thought, you know, Rudy was like our little sister, too. But, you know, Theo, in many respects, was the American teenage boy, right? That's how it felt. And so when he went through all of these things in life, right, having to deal with fashion for the first time, right? I mean, you go from stop wearing nylon shorts and T-shirts, and all of a sudden, to impress girls, you know, you got to wear certain clothes. And you guys remember the whole thing when Denise made the shirt. But we grew up with Theo. We did. He grew up, and we shared so many of the same teenage experiences. And I'm not sitting here that, you know, Theo was a role model, but for a lot of people in our country, you know, Cliff Huxtable, Bill Cosby, and Felicia Rashad, of course, they were like the parental unit that so many people wanted to have. And it was so much wisdom, right, that was kind of shared as the family and the children, of course, navigated through the growing up process. For a lot of people that didn't have somebody in their life to give them friendly advice on how to handle things, you learned it from watching Cosby. And so there was an identity there that really just transcended race and socioeconomic backgrounds and religion and everything else, because, you know, it was much watched TV on Thursday night. You had to go watch a Cosby Show. And it wasn't just because it was entertaining. It was because it was so incredibly encouraging, right? It wasn't just funny. There were some very serious moments. And some of that kind of carried over to the Fresh Prince, you know, with Uncle Phil and, you know, Carlton, of course, and Will. You know, there was so much of that. There was a fatherly influence in so much of that that had a tough side and a sensitive side. And so to lose Theo, and certainly the way we lost Bill Cosby, I mean, it's like it kind of wrecks a lot of our ideals, right? But to think that Theo, or Malcolm Jamal Warner is more to the point, was on a family vacation, you know, it's just so tragic. It is. You know, I think about, you know, we're all getting older, right? There's no denying that. You know, life is short, death is certain. And the people that we grew up kind of idolizing and supporting, they're going to pass away. That's an important aspect to remember. Nobody lives forever. And the thing that I think about is, like with Ozzy, you know, it's pretty much natural causes. You know, we kind of died of old age. If I told you in 85... that Ozzy'd still be alive in 2025, you wouldn't have believed it. But then you look at Hulk Hogan and you begin to think, you know, he was basically invincible. You know, of course, that became the big thing. You know, for many of us, our first introduction was when, you know, he fought Rocky, right? Surely you've seen that, right? Hulk Hogan was kind of thrust into the national spotlight because of an exhibition match against Rocky. Everybody's like, oh, he's a wrestler. And it was great marketing for Titan Sports, you know. And then Hulk Hogan was like encouraging kids, you know, all the Hulkamaniacs out there, you know, brush your teeth and do your homework and listen to mom and dad. And, you know, he was reinforcing all these values, you know, in a time when things were, you know, kind of full of decadence, you know. And so it was very wholesome. It didn't always end that way, you know, because sometimes we put these people on pedestals and we forget that they're humans and they're going to make mistakes. And then, of course, you know, with the NWO, you know, Hogan with the big heel turn. I thought that was the most interesting Hulk Hogan, you know. He kind of turned, you know, had that heel turn, as we talk about, and eventually kind of came back around. But the reality of it is he was electrifying. And he was a huge part of Americana. And the thing that I think that I learned this week, and maybe learn is the wrong term, maybe it's just kind of reinforcing some things that I already knew, is that none of these people are perfect. None of them. You and I aren't perfect either. And I venture to say that if somebody dug hard enough and long enough, they could find some things about us that we probably wouldn't want out there publicly. I'm fairly transparent. There are some things that are not for public consumption, but the reality of it is we've all said some things and done some things that are probably not consistent with who we'd want to be. And we've all got character defects. Every one of us. And we're going to have them until we die. And it's something that's a daily battle. You know, you continue to work on. And I'll be honest with you guys, too. I was not a nice person for a while. It was an effort for me. I mean, and I felt so phony with so much fake civility and things like that. My wife really softened me up a lot. She did. I'm alive today because I met her, you know, truthfully. Not that I couldn't have met somebody else and gave that girl a good time, too. But I get so much benefit from her. And that's not, again, to, you know, put her on too high a pedestal. You know, she's got her faults, too. But when you're in love with somebody, you kind of overlook those things. So when I met her, it's like, man, she'd been through so much. And I remember, like, how sweet her spirit was. Like, she just had this healing quality about her. Like, she had this exuberance about life. And I was like, man, yeah, I've been through all this. And, you know, my music career is over. I've been to jail. I've been to drug rehab. And, yeah, I just felt like my life was over. And then I met her. And I was like, you know what? Even if all I ever do is just make enough money to pay the rent and keep the bills paid and I can stay with her, man, my life is great. That's how I felt. And then all of a sudden, you know, I got out of myself a little bit, you know, started doing more things for her, you know, because that's the fun thing about having a teenage girlfriend, right? It's like she does everything. And I read this recently. It's like for men, too, like when you know that a man's in love is when he does things for her. Not necessarily the other way around, because for most of us, for most men, we have always had a woman to do a lot of things for us. Right? You know, mom cooks the food, does the laundry, you know. And so a lot of that stuff we don't, you know, we've always kind of taken for granted that somebody does it for us. And so, yeah, you may show up and start doing our laundry for us, and that's great. We appreciate it. But we've always had that, right? But when we kind of get out of character as men and begin to fall in love with somebody, we become a lot less selfish. We become a lot more acts of service type deal, right? We'll spend our money on things like flowers and candy and trips and stuff we wouldn't ordinarily spend it on because we're trying to do something for you to make you feel special, right? If there's a man out there not making you feel special, then he's not really in love with you, right? He may be in love with being married, but he may not be in love with you. And that's not to say that we don't get older and we kind of get a little bit lazy at times and take each other for granted. But the reality of it is every one of us has faults. And every celebrity and politician and lawmaker and dog catcher and tax collector and pastor, every one of us has secrets. Every one of us has something about us that other people may find somewhat offensive. You know, somebody goes back and finds something you tweeted when you were 16 years old and they think that's still who you are today. It's not true. And there are sometimes, too, in a moment of passion, you know, you get into an argument with somebody you love and you say the most hurtful things you can possibly say. You play tough, but you play to win, right? And that's one thing that I'm proud to say. I have been with Dana since I met her July 10th, 1992. Our first date was August 10th of 1992. So that's you're coming up on 33 years. And I have never called her the B word in 33 years. Never, ever. Ever. I haven't. That's not to say that I hadn't said some things that I regret, some things that hurt her feelings, especially when I was much younger. And there's sometimes, too, when you got to give each other room to be each other, you know. Like, we had to deal just the other day, you know. I mean, it wasn't a major fight or anything, but I could tell it had been a long day for her. And I was, like, texting her, and she didn't get right back with me. I needed something. And so I was a little bit irritated, but it wasn't a big deal. But, you know, it was just one of those things that just kind of turns, like, it opens up the keg of frustration, right? She's had a long, frustrating day. And so I just let her vent. Like, I didn't even really, like, argue back. I just, like, let her talk, you know. Because you know how it is when you get to those points. Anything you say is wrong anyway, right? But 20 years ago, that thing would have taken 3 or 4 days to resolve. But instead, I just give her like a few minutes to just vent. I don't try to fix anything. And I said, you know what? Hey, I love you. I'm sorry you had a tough day. Sorry if I upset you, you know. And then she gets home. And then I'll say, hey, listen, I just want to let you know I'm sorry you were so stupid earlier, you know. And that's kind of like our little way of letting each other know that the whole thing is over. But, you know, to get back on all this stuff, man, that's the sad thing for me is I see so many people out there that have so many negative things to say. Number one, about people you don't know, and you see a snapshot of their life, and then that becomes your opinion of them. Like my buddy Scott Sorensen years ago, he used to always fuss at me and about I would call somebody something. Like I would say, hey, this guy is an absolute jerk. And he goes, hey, well, you know, maybe the way he's acting right now is a jerk. When he did this, he's acting like a jerk. But that's not the totality of who he is, Steve. And it took me years to kind of figure that out, right? Because, like, we judge people based on our impressions. And we judge people based on our experiences. And we don't look at the totality of who people are and the good they've done, right? I tend to judge people on how they treat me. There are some people out there that you may think some big things of that I don't have strong opinions of because we've got different experiences. Like you see people at their best, right? You know, that's the thing, like you think about like living here in the maroon bubble, you know, we see each other a lot, right? And we see the human side of each other. And that's a good and a bad thing, right? I mean, there are many of you all that you come here, you have the good experience or whatever, and you get people in small doses. And I can tell you, like, I got a big personality. And I can promise you, I grade on people after a while. I do. I understand that. And vice versa. But it doesn't mean we don't care about each other. And that's the thing that I think you work through all this stuff is when you have a relationship and there is a disagreement, relationship or a friendship or an acquaintanceship, whatever, you know, you understand that when you judge people at their worst, right, that's wrong. And frankly, judging people at their best is wrong too, because it's usually somewhere in the middle. And so when I see these fallen heroes, you know, be criticized, it makes me a little sad. It does. Because I'm like, you know, listen, number one, you didn't know them, right? But the reality of it is, it's just like, you know, Ozzy Osbourne at last concert raising, what, $190 million for charity, and his family didn't take a penny? $190 million. I mean, just imagine the good that can be done with that money, you know. But it's like somebody says, well, you know, one time he bit the head off a bat. Does that outweigh $190 million for charity? You know what I mean? If that's what you want to believe about somebody, then I think that's a you problem rather than a them problem, right? Because when we discussed this before on the show, there are so many people out there that cannot wait for somebody to get out of character a little bit, somebody to have a human moment, you know, somebody get caught in a viral video cursing out a waiter, and you don't see what happened before then. You just see the celebrity become unhinged, and you're like, I knew it. And a lot of that's born out of jealousy. You know what I'm saying? There are a lot of people out there that I'm sure make a lot more money than me that I don't think are very talented. But you know what? We're not conducting an opinion poll. You know, that people, they have fans, they've got supporters. I mean, it's goodness gracious. If you ever go into any of these music groups on Facebook, I mean, you want to talk about people that are part of a cult. Goodness gracious. And some would say the same of me. Because some of my bands, favorite bands, you talk poorly about them, I don't even feel the need to defend them. I was like, you're just stupid, you know. Chances are, you know, old Johnny Prep was dating this girl, and then some dude in the Motley Crue shirt picked her up in a bar one night, and he's never gotten over it, right? That's where a lot of that stuff comes from. You know, and then there's people that, like, you know, like there are some bands out there that have very little talent and very few hits, but there are people that are like, you know what, this music just spoke to me, and who am I to be critical of that, right? And I can tell you the band sucks. You know, I don't like them, But, you know, I try not to be a music snob. Sometimes I can't help myself. But my opinion should have no relevance on your opinion, right? I'm not an opinion maker. I share my opinion on this show, and I'll share you the facts and things of that nature as we get through it. But the reality of it is like, you know, I'm from the MTV generation back when MTV actually played music. And the thing that I thought about, too, I was very critical of MTV on Monday. And you forget MTV did do the Osbourne show. Well, they weren't playing, you know, metal videos anymore. But they did have Ozzy on the Osbourne show. And I think that opened the whole family up to a different level of celebrity. And people said, you know what, they're kind of just like us. They just got more money and cool jobs. So I want to commend MTV for that. But for many of you, this has been a really, really difficult week. And I had a friend of mine hit me up, you know, because he knows what a big Ozzy fan I am. And he goes, dude, how are you doing? I said, man, I feel like I've lost a family member. And it just feels so weird to say that because I've never met him. But there have been so many times the soundtrack of my life, you know, has been Black Sabbath or Ozzy, and really more the Ozzy solo stuff. I love the Black Sabbath stuff, but, you know, I love the Randy years, and I love the Jake years, and, you know, the Zakk Wylde years, and today we're going to do Randy on our top 10. But for other people, they didn't like Ozzy. And you know what? I'm perfectly okay with that. I don't need other people to agree with me to feel good about my opinion. I think that's one of the biggest marks of insecurity in the world, is when other people have an opinion and they're not prepared to accept a dissenting opinion. That kind of goes back to part of our earlier segment, right? And what you're really telling me, when you are threatened by my opinion, whether that be politically, educationally, sports-wise, whatever, if you're threatened by my opinion, then you're not secure in your own. I'm a Motley Crue guy for life. And people are like, oh, they're all hair metal. I don't care. You can say what you want. You're entitled to your opinion. It's not going to change how I feel about Motley Crue. There's nothing you can say that's going to change that, because I've got an intimate relationship with that music. And it's the same thing for Ozzy. And it's, and listen, I knew that there's supposedly some other material that'll be released next year. And we knew that was coming. And that'll probably be the end of it, right? I'm sure a few years from now, Jack and them will find some unfinished songs, and with the help of AI or whatever, they'll release those too. And we'll probably have, you know, a couple losses, like we did with Chester, who we lost 8 years ago now. My goodness. But I think that's an important aspect of this. That's why I think what makes me, I guess, somewhat frustrated about the negative comments is, for all of you that are hurting, right? And you feel somewhat wounded, right? Because a part of our youth is gone. Three big parts of our youth are gone in a week. You know, it's just like a drip, 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 and it's just, it's huge. But these people get out there and they want to rage bait you into responding. I'm going to encourage you not to respond to any of that stuff, because those are incredibly insecure people. It's like, hey, I'm going to get out here and talk poorly about Hulk Hogan or Ozzy Osbourne or whatever. They get out there and say those things just for engagement. We talked about those people that are kind of grifting for engagement, and it still drives me crazy. And that's a personal issue I got to deal with. But you're seeing it now. You mean, like, you're seeing people now that never went and watched Hulk Hogan wrestle, that never really watched wrestling or whatever, and they're just, you know, oh, I'm just so devastated, you know. And it's like, oh, we need to get a like or a retweet or whatever. And listen, I've loved all the tributes on the Ozzy stuff. I have. And I know that maybe everybody is just kind of doing what they can to help other people heal. You know, you've seen Judas Priest, and you've seen Shinedown. You've seen Papa Roach and others that have come out and done some things. And then Bentancourt, of course, some extreme that played at the show. Tom Morello. And you've seen all these people come out, and they have these stories. And I think they help others heal, right? But when I see somebody else that really have had nothing to do with it, just kind of jump in, I know what's happening there, right? And I think it's a little offensive, and maybe I should be a little more thick-skinned than that. But I think there are people out there that want to monetize engagement. It's like, well, hey, here's the product of the moment. You know, so they become an expert on everything. Well, they had to give you their spill about the Diddy trial. you know, and then all of a sudden this happens, and they got to go do a video and tell you about that. You know, it's just, it's, that's a tough way to make a living, if you ask me. You know, but I love Ozzy, I love the Osbournes, love Hulk Hogan, love Malcolm Jamal Warner, and it's so crazy too to think his age that he's gone. And I just think about how, what a horrific scene that is. But guys, we're gonna make it, and every day is a gift. Every day is a gift. And one of the things that I want to remind, I had a guy one day pull me over, and he had gone through some difficulty in life. And I had said on this show before, we are not guaranteed, you know, that bedside vigil, right? We're not guaranteed that. We're not guaranteed to be in a hospital room surrounded by all the people that we love and everything else that goes on. And we don't always have a chance to tell everybody we love them. So we need to do it now. All right, time for today's player of the day, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is a mortgage professional. There are a lot of people that are mortgage loan originators. He is a mortgage professional. 24 years of experience in the industry. Give him a call or text today at 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Maybe the dream of home ownership has eluded you, and it may not necessarily be about you. Maybe you had the wrong loan originator. Blair is a guy that knows how to get loans constructed to give you the best chance of approval. And maybe you're not ready for that, but he can help you get ready for that. It's important to him, right? You don't stay in that industry as long as he does without knowing the ifs, ands, and buts about how things work. Blair is a Mississippi State guy through and through, but, you know, equal opportunity lender, obviously. You don't have to be a Bulldog to get the best level of service. He's going to give that to everybody. But do mention to him you heard about him on the show. He'd be glad you did. In addition to that, Blair's a guy that can help you get in your first home, your next home, your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo. Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Our player of the day, we're going with Drew Weyers. Recently started playing in the Cape Cod League, and I joked with him yesterday. I said, you've kind of become the Cape Crusader. I'm going to work that into a title somewhere. Had a couple of bombs the other day, doing some cool things, man. And the more that I see what this staff is doing, getting guys like Charlie Wortham, you know, to play against great competition, getting Drew Weyers and some guys into the Cape as spots have opened up post-draft. We're preparing this team for fall ball and for SEC ball now. Great stuff. So Drew Weyers, your Close It Blair player of the day. Time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by Kalido Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O guitars.com. Today's top 10 list, obviously, very Kalido Guitar-esque, for sure. Visit Kalido Guitars when you're in Lake Jackson, Texas. If you're in the greater Houston, Texas area and you got some time to kill, ride down and see the showroom. You'd be glad you did. Incredible place. Owned and operated by Mississippi State folks. Whether you're looking for a beginner guitar or a professional-grade guitar, you can find that and everything in between at Kalido Guitars. Acoustic, electric, classic, anything you need. Cases, gig bags, accessories, anything guitar related you can find. This is a guitar shop, okay? It's a place we'd hang out if it was in our town. We would just go hang out and go play, right? And some of us would embarrass ourselves, including your good friend and host. I just kind of like to bang out a few power chords every now and again and have a good time. You know, play the Sex Pistols, stuff like that. You know, I'm not a real technical player, but I enjoy playing. Now, whether you or as good, worse, or better than me, you can find what you need at Kalido Guitars, whether that is a guitar stand or a new guitar. Rather than go do business with somebody else that may not be there after the sale, how many times do you go order something online and you think it's perfect, and you get it home and it's not exactly as you want, then you can't get anybody on the phone. That's the worst part of online ordering, right? You can't talk to anybody. The level of service you get from Kalido Guitars far exceeds everything else out there in the industry. Great service before, during, and after the sale. They're going to give you a promo code to use too. Whether you do business in person, over the phone, or online, promo code BSR will unlock some savings for you. Promo code BSR gets you 10% off your purchase, so right out of the gate, you're getting the Kenfolks discount. Then you get free shipping, and you get no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. In addition to those discounts, they're going to make a 5% donation of your purchase price to the Bulldog Excellence Fund. Be sure and check it out. You'll be glad you did. Calido Guitars, again, CalidoGuitars.com. And as we get ready to go into our top 10 list today, some more sad news. Golden Earring guitarist George Coleman's dead at 77. Yeah, crazy, man. Radar Love, that's him. Twilight Zone, that's him. A lot of celebrity deaths here as of late. I mentioned we're going to do a series of Ozzy Osbourne lists. Today takes us to the Randy Rhoads years. Now, Randy only recorded a couple of albums with him, and of course there was the tribute album and there's a live album. But there were two studio albums with Randy Rhoads on guitar, and Randy is the guy, too, that kind of revolutionized guitar play, right? As Eddie Van Halen introduced the world into something they had never heard before, and I don't know if there's been anybody really like him, but Randy was in that same genre, right? I think a lot of people said, you know what? Eddie's an innovator, and Randy is a guy that is kind of built upon that tree. Of course, King Edward the Great, but Randy Rhoads, and it's not just because of his tragic death that people still hold him in such a sense of reverence. It's because of his immense skill. So these are my top 10 songs from the Ozzy Osbourne, Randy Rhoads years. Number 10, we'll start with this one. This is an anthemic song, but it's You Can't Kill Rock and Roll, and you can't. Because you get the recorded word and tune, and it lasts forever. Especially, well, I guess, until Apple Music croaks. But number 9, and I love this one, and I know many of you do too. It's a deeper cut. We didn't really have singles back then because we didn't get a lot of airplay for metal. But it's the title track on the second album of Randy Rhoads. It's Diary of a Madman. The intro to that thing is just so great. It's like you think about what Tony Iommi did with Black Sabbath. And you get to Randy Rhoads, and while there was some commonality, it was just simply different. But I think this song is kind of Black Sabbath-esque. Number 8, one of the best solos of the Randy Rhoads catalog, and maybe a track you don't know as well, it's Believer. Sam Bam Coltan from Faster Pussycat did a little bit of Ozzy Osbourne tribute, and he played the No More Tears solo and Believer, said he couldn't choose between the two, but Believer is one of those songs that real guitar aficionados really love. Number 7, a track that was still on the Ozzy set list for years, going way back, Blizzard of Oz, it's I Don't Know. Number 6, a controversial song, and again, this is, well, you know, this song kind of is in the same vein of you folks that only read the headlines and you jump into the comment section like you don't read the content. You just start commenting. This is what number 6, Suicide Solution's all about, right? People just saw that title and they assumed we're advocating for suicide. We absolutely were not advocating for suicide. It's basically a song about alcoholism. You know, wine is fine, but whiskey's quicker. Suicide is done with liquor. That's what it's about. It's about how alcoholism will kill you. It's not about killing yourself purposely. Completely different thing. But again, we had a lot of people back then in the religious right that had this acrimony about heavy metal music, and they just jumped on any little morsel to suggest that there was ill intent. Number 5, and it's interesting, and it's an interesting juxtaposition how I put these songs on the list. But number 5 is Goodbye to Romance. And the guitar on this is what makes the song. It absolutely does. But it's so interesting that to show kind of the diversity in the catalog of Ozzy Osbourne, that here we are talking about drinking yourself to death and then saying goodbye to romance. Great song. The last 4, I think most people would agree these are the top 4 songs. Maybe we don't agree on most of the order. I think we'll all agree at number 1. Number 4... I love this man. I love this one so much. And this was a difficult decision. But number four is Flying High Again. And I thought about this when Ozzy passed away the other day. That's the first song that kind of popped in my mind. I said, Randy and Ozzy are flying high again. And I put it on and I listened to it and I enjoyed it. And it's one of those songs that just kind of stands up. There's a lot of songs from that era and that genre that don't. This one does. Number three, the very eerie, we talked about the Black Sabbath influence, the very eerie keyboard sound on this. And, of course, the song about Aleister Crowley, it's Mr. Crowley at number three. And I think Randy's guitar solo on this is, we talk about solos matching songs. This is one of the most perfect examples of how a solo builds the song and makes it grander. Number two, and I love the guitar on this one, but man, the drum fill in on this one, phenomenal, man. It's Over the Mountain. And I think it's one of Ozzy's best vocal performances, too. Again, a song that has stood the test of time. You put it on today, and it doesn't sound like something that came out in the early 80s. But number one, what else could it be? Right? It was the first solo, quote, single of Ozzy Osbourne's solo career. And I tweeted it out yesterday, the little segment from Jack and Ozzy's road trip when they went to, like, the Magic Mountain where all the masters are held. And they put the masters on, and they isolated the solo of Randy Rhoads and how Ozzy didn't want to listen to it. He goes, you know, it brings him back to a great time, but an incredibly sad time. And they decided to listen to it, and they put it on, and Randy absolutely kills it on Crazy Train. That's your number one track. Again, probably one of the most obvious number one songs we've ever had on a top 10 list. So the Randy Rhoads years, Crazy Train. And interestingly enough, when they were trying to decide what songs to play in between the third and fourth quarters at Davis Wade Stadium, when so many of you were tired of Don't Stop Believing, they asked some of us for suggestions. This was my suggestion, to play Crazy Train. And it went over. It went great. It didn't go as well as the Sweet Dreams remix, though. I admit that. I can get behind that, too. And I just want you guys to be excited. But when we did, it was so cool, Davis Wade, they play Crazy Train. And when Ozzy does the everybody in the crowd did it too. And I saw all those young kids over in the student section doing it. And I was like, you know, if this is what we decide to go with, I think this will really catch on. Well, it didn't, but it doesn't diminish the song in any way or the experience at Davis Wade Stadium. But it's so funny. Crazy Train, you played anywhere, sporting events, and everybody jumps along and sings along. But what an incredible riff, man. What an incredible riff. What an incredible talent. So when we get back together on Monday, we're going to get into the Jakey Lee years. Yeah, yeah. Of course, you know, there was a little segue between Randy and Jake, but there weren't any studio albums recorded. So, you know, Bob Days, we know those guys had their day with Ozzy, but you know, Jake was the true successor to Randy Rhoads. So we'll get into that on Monday. We'll get into Zakk Wylde on Wednesday. And then we'll see where Friday takes us. Of course, Zakk left the band for a while, and there was some stuff recorded. And so we'll go through that stuff, too. You know, the Zakk years were great years, too. And people kind of forget that. I think Zakk brought some real machismo to the second half of Ozzy's solo career. And I so interesting. Guitar Magazine, I was a monthly subscriber to Guitar Magazine. And a couple things I'll tell you about that. There was one time, even as a youngster, I stumbled across something in one of the trade papers about Jake Ely was putting together a band called Badlands. And some guy had written in named Gary Schmeitzer. I could maybe go find Gary on Facebook these days. But Gary had put on the message board. We used to have those back then. But it was printed at the back of Guitar Magazine. And it said, Jakey Lee, where are you? Without you, my inspiration is gone. Well, in the December 1989 issue, I sent a letter in. And it got printed in the magazine. And Jakey Lee was on the cover. They ended up a feature on Jakey Lee because of my tip. And I said, hey, Jake's putting the band together, and here's who all is going to be in the band. Hope this tides you over until the album comes out. And so, yeah, we'll take a little credit for that. And then later, when Zakk joined the band, Guitar Magazine had a feature with him. And he made the comment that he was the third luckiest guy in the world. And everybody just kind of assumed he's talking about Randy, Jake, and then himself. And so by the end of the interview, they asked Zach, who is a character, so who are the three, the three luckiest guys in the world? And he goes, well, it's Pee Wee Herman, Dan Quayle, and me, you know, which obviously was a great hook that the interviewer was able to use there. Super cool stuff. But yeah, huge, huge, huge loss to the music world. And we'll celebrate the Aussie music for a while. And I think you guys will enjoy that. And hopefully, man, we can get a bit of a break here. I mean, you know, the month of July has been brutal when it's come to celebrity deaths. But, you know, it doesn't make their death any more significant than anyone else. But it's just the loss is felt by such a bigger group of people. Right. I mean, they're just regular people. And I got a lot of friends that are in rock bands and they just have a cooler job. They're just like me and you. They got the same problems. They just have a cooler job. And I got some things we're working on. We got a music project that is kind of moving forward. And we're going to do an open call on the show and on social media when the time comes. I've got some people that you guys know that we're going to do. We're going to work together on a project. And we're going to need your help, okay? And so I'll tell you more about that as we go. You know, music is like the one thing that drugs took from me that I've never reclaimed. And a lot of that is a fear of failure. But I feel like I'm at a point now where we can kind of do something. And so we're going to do it. And I've already got some commitments from some people. And we'll sit down and break bread and kind of flesh out the details. And then I'll share with you guys too. But I just want you to know there's some cool things coming. And I will have a formal announcement maybe in a week to 10 days or so about one of the things that we're going to do. And we're going to do it this year. It's going to happen this year. And then we'll see where it goes from there, right? But it's something that's very important to me. It's a cause that's very important to me. And when I share it with you, I think you're going to think it's pretty cool. Hopefully I don't embarrass myself, but I'm going to do some things that I think are beneficial to other people that are suffering. And so that may be more information that you needed to know right now, kind of give away a little. When you hear the full details, you'll see, yeah, it all makes sense. It all makes sense. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. We do. And why? Because they have what we want. We can't get enough Mississippi State merch. We can't. Whether it be apparel, gift ideas, everything you need to detail out your fan cave, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. That's a commandment. Do it. It's an order. Do it. And maybe if you're a nonconformist, you're like, you know what, Steve, nobody tells me what to do. Well, then maybe you're better off shopping online. Visit campusbookmart.net. You can peruse through all of their fine selections and get everything you need as a Mississippi State fan. Whether it's tailgating supplies or, you know, something new for yourself that you need to put in your office, maybe you need to update some decorative items around the house, you can find out whatever you need at Campus Bookmart. Super cool. Promo code BSR works for you at campusbookmart.net. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, incomplete. Guys, we're about 5 weeks away from college football season. You don't need to wear an old, outdated shirt to the game. Be prepared. Buy some new apparel, and maybe you're going to sneak in that last little trip before school begins. Everybody needs to wear some new Mississippi State gear. And chances are the kids already outgrew what you bought them last year. Mom, it's okay to buy yourself something. Treat yourself a little bit. I'm giving you permission. I am. It's okay. Be sure and check it out and get everything you need to feel even better about your Bulldog fandom. CampusBookmart.net. All right. One of you hit me up and said, you know, Steve, you've done all these opponent previews, but you haven't really talked about us that much. Well, you know what? That's a good point. So we're going to approach this segment of the show as if Mississippi State was an opponent. We'll just kind of break down what we did, what we expect, what we have coming back. And so we'll just knock it out. You don't need me to tell you this. We're not breaking any news here. Mississippi State went 2-10 last year. And I tell you, I didn't think we were and let me be careful how I say this. I didn't think we were a terrible football team. I thought we were incredibly deficient on the defensive line, and it showed. And teams just kind of figured it out. You get a lead on Mississippi State, you can salt the game away just running the football, and then all of a sudden they've got to commit more people to the box. You can get some play action stuff in there. And we couldn't rush the passer. But 2-10, 0-8 in the conference, 0-5 away from Davis-Wade Stadium. That wasn't fun. We end the year on a three-game losing streak. It all started well enough. We beat Eastern Kentucky 56-7. In the very first drive, you know, we lay it up there, run the fly route. Everybody's like, man, this is what I wanted to see. This is what I expected the Jeff Lebby situation to be about. You know, this is what I absolutely thought it was going to be. 35-7 at the break, you know, and then State just kind of coasted there down the stretch. But, you know, we hit J-Mo 65 yards on what, the second play of the game, third play of the game, your third play of the game? And it's 7-0. And then we're just kind of rolling along there. Your Creed Whittemore, remember him? Yeah, Creed had a 41-yard run. Everything is just going great. And we know it's an FCS team, but we're just kind of happy to see us get out there and stretch our legs a little bit. Little did we know, we would only have one more day to celebrate after that. You remember that crazy game at Arizona State? Made the trip out there to Tempe. Went out, so we're going to get a chance to do that. We knew that Arizona State was a team that was rebuilding too. Guys, it's 10-0 after 1 and 27-3 at the break. And at this point, I'm just like, let's just get out of here. Well, we won the second half 20-3. But let's not forget that final drive of the game, Arizona State could have punched it in. They didn't. They win the game. And of course, ultimately go on to the playoffs. But at the time, we didn't know that. And we got exposed that night. Cam Scatabo runs for 262 yards. We held Sam Levitt to just 69 yards passing. If we do that this year, we're going to win the football game. But again, after that, everybody kind of realized, you know what? If you can run a football on Mississippi State, you're in good shape. Now, we lose this game to Toledo, and this has been a low spot, really, for the last decade. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and listen, Jason Cannell and those guys do a good job, but this was an absolute embarrassing performance for Mississippi State. It was terrible. Nothing redeeming about this thing at all. Nothing. They go down, I guess it was their first possession, maybe second, and they put together a 12-play, 70-yard drive that eats up 6 minutes, and a 4-yard touchdown pass makes it 7-0. You're like, okay, we'll get it figured out. No, we didn't. We didn't. They put together another lengthy drive, makes it 14-0 early in the second. We get on the board with a field goal, and you think, okay, we just got to get some stops. Well, we couldn't. Another 10-play, 75-yard drive makes it 21-3. And at this point, a lot of our students are like, I'll just go home and watch college football. And everybody that was kind of hanging around said, we'll wait for the half, Steve. Well, it was 28-3 at the break. And at that point, the stadium began to empty out. A lot of people decided to get to the tailgate. A lot of our fraternity kids, like, I'll just go back to the fraternity house and drink some beer and watch somebody else play. I don't blame them. Second half, first possession for Toledo, they make it 35-3. It's one of the most frustrating days I have spent sitting in Davis-Wade Stadium, and I've sat in there a lot, right? Final was 41-17, and it was, again, it was so incredibly embarrassing, that game was. I'm never embarrassed to be a Bulldog, but I was embarrassed on behalf of our team because, again, we knew that Toledo was good for their league. We didn't think they'd come in here and skull drag us. They did. They outrushed us 103 yards. We actually threw it for more yards than they did. It's because we were behind having to throw it all the time, but they put up 454 yards of offense. We had 385. Penalties were a factor, too, for us. But, yeah, it was an embarrassing, embarrassing game. We get Florida, and that was a game for a while, right? It's one of those games we talked about a little bit the other day when we were previewing Florida. This was a game for a little bit. You know, after one, it's 7-7. You know, they score, and then, you know, we go down and score. 9 plays, 62 yards, eats up 3 minutes. It's a 7-7 game after one. Florida then scores. And then we turn it right back over to them. And then they score quick drive here. Just two plays. 35-yard pass from Mertz to Hayden Hansen. It makes it 21-7. You're like, we just got to get a score before the half. But instead, we pin them back deep there at the 9, and they go, takes them 3 minutes to go down, make a 28-7 game. And you're like, man, this is terrible. Well, just before it's over, just as everybody's getting ready again to seek their entertainment elsewhere, Blake Shapen engineers a six-play, 75-yard drive with under a minute. And we go down and make it 28-14. And now you're thinking, okay, all right, we get a stop to open the second half. We got a chance to climb back in this thing. Well, guess what? We did. And then Shapen leads us down the field, 13 plays, 76 yards, complete to J-Mo, makes it 28-21. You're like, hey, we have eaten some time up, 6 minutes and 43 seconds. Defense, get us another stop. Maybe we can make this thing happen. Unfortunately, weren't able to do that. It's 35-21, and then it's 42-21. And, you know, give Blake Shapen a lot of credit. You know, he did his best to fight through there, ends up getting injured diving on a fumble there. Craziness. And Michael Van Buren comes in, leads us down the field, makes it 42-28. But it kind of gave us a little bit of life, you know. You're like, you know, Blake's probably out, but looks like Mike's got some moxie about him. But again, that fourth quarter didn't go well for us. Lose your quarterback for the year and can't get stops on defense. And we were so optimistic about that, right? It's like, man, if we can be 2-1, maybe 3-0, Florida coming in here, we got a chance because they're probably going to be 1-2 and probably feeling bad about themselves where they were, but we couldn't get it done. The game at Texas. And give our offensive staff a lot of credit. We came out and we punched Texas in the mouth. And we had trouble finishing drives, but we did not look like we were going to play it safe. We did not act like we were scared of Texas. And you would think Jeff Leppy, being an Oklahoma guy, would say, no, we're not going to be scared of Texas. Well, they get a touchdown with about 6 minutes to go in the first quarter. That's the only score in the first quarter. It's 7-0, and then, hey, we get a little drive together, and Ferry connects on a field goal, makes it 7-3. We get a stop and go back down. Can't finish the drive, but we get another field goal. Guys, it's 7-6. It's 7-6, man. And you're thinking, hey, we get a stop here. We can get into the break and be down a score. Well, that ultimately proved to be correct, but we couldn't get the score. Arch Manning with a 50-yard pass there. Makes it 14-6, but again, it's a one-score game. And I remember, you know, walking outside to call the wife at halftime, and there are tens of thousands of people leaving this ball game, and it's a one-score game. I get on the elevator to go back up, and there's this Texas guy, and he is beside himself with anxiety. I said, "Dude, where's everybody going?" He goes, "I don't know. I don't like this at all. I don't like this at all. One-score game. We're going to need the crowd." And lo and behold, we make a game of it. Got a turnover, turned it over. And then once they went up 21-6, we kind of felt like it was over. When they went up 28-6, we knew it was over. But give the Bulldogs credit, we didn't quit. Michael Van Buren runs it in for a touchdown, makes it 28-13. So it's a two-score game with about 6 minutes to go, and then they kick a, I guess they scored on a touchdown, make it 35-13. So the final score, maybe not truly indicative of how competitive that game was. But the reality of it is like, I get so tired of this playing it close. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in it to win it. I know you guys are too. I mean, you guys that listen to these shows and subscribe to Gene's page and that kind of stuff, you're the most passionate fans in the fan base. You're not just here to be entertained. You want to win. And so we went to Georgia. I did not give us much chance to win. I know you guys didn't either. I mean, let's just kind of call it for what it is. But again, the Bulldogs played it pretty good here. We actually had the lead. You know, we lose 3 yards on that opening possession of ours and get a 47-yard field goal out of it. Well, then, you know, Georgia matches us, make it 3-3. They score again. Branson Robinson from Germantown, plunges in from 8 yards out, ended up hurting his knee again on this in this game. It's 10-3, but you're like, you know what? We're headed to the second quarter, down a touchdown. Woodring adds a field goal, and then, what do you know, we hit Kaliakari for a touchdown. It's 13-10, and you could feel that things were really tightening up in Athens, Georgia. Give them some credit. They go down and score. Next thing you know, they get some separation, make it 27-10. And then, you know, first possession of the third quarter, we knew they were going to come out of the attack. They do, and it lands. They're up 34-10. And again, the Bulldogs had every opportunity to quit, but we didn't. We battle back. Johnny Daniels on a nice run makes it 34-17. We get a stop. Put another drive together, drive 80 yards. Davin Booth scores. It's a 10-point game going to the fourth. And you're thinking, you know what? We're one play away from really making this thing interesting. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get it done. Georgia puts together a 16-play, 81-yard drive. Eats up 7.5 minutes. Kind of put it away there. And then we get it to Akari late. And, I mean, all it did was just kind of change the margin of victory. But again, yeah, I commend the Bulldogs for not quitting, especially in that environment. And listen, Georgia was still a good team. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But and again, it's tough thing. Michael Van Buren, two first starts on the road against top 10 opponents, you know, and teams have made a playoff. But things change. The A&M game, and we talked about this a little bit in our A&M preview, I think people forget how competitive this game was. And you could make a case that we should have won the game. You certainly can. State goes down. Man, we put together a great drive to open this ball game. 12 plays, 92 yards, and it's a 14-yard touchdown pass to Davin Booth, makes it 7-0. Well, they answer, make it 7-7, go into the second. And then A&M takes the lead after an 81-yard, 7-play drive. Le'Veon Moss runs it in. Great player, for sure. Makes it 14-7. Again, we can't finish the drive, but we come away with 3 points. It's 14-10. We got to get a stop here, give ourselves a chance to get in there into the locker room with, you know, within a score. That works out, but it's kind of a wild finish to the second quarter. A&M scores a touchdown and make it 21-10 with a 1:48 to go. And then again, we put together an impressive drive, 8 plays, 75 yards, and a 1:27 to make it 21-17. So we get to the half down 4. And we've actually played pretty good. And you're thinking, you know what, we just need to get a little juice here, give ourselves a chance. Well, they come out trying to just kind of play ball control, and they eat up half of the third quarter, but they only come away with a field goal. So now that feels like a win because we get the ball back down a touchdown. And can you imagine what Davis Wade would have felt like if you tie this game? Well, we don't get anything done. And they get it back and score to make it 31-17. And then in the fourth, we score again. Touchdown pass to Kevin Coleman makes it a one-score game. And again, here we are. Plenty of time left. We end up getting a stop. Can't do anything offensively. They ultimately kick a field goal with about 6 minutes to go. That caps the scoring at 34-24. But there was so much talk about the defense last year. This is one of those games where I felt that the offense let us down. And I think that's a fair assessment, even though I'm the one that's making it. But, I mean, you look here, like, the final, let's see here, final six drives, right? So we get that touchdown there in a second. So this is our second half drives. We turn over our first drive on downs. We end up punting. We do get the touchdown after the pick. But on that drive, 3 plays for just 12 yards, right? And then we punt and then turn it over on downs. So 6 drives in the second half. And 3 times we turn it over on downs. Offense couldn't get it done. So even when the defense kind of does their job, didn't work out for us. Now we get to the Arkansas game. Defense absolutely did not get their job done here. I think this, you know, we talk about how bad the Toledo game was. I think, you know, maybe we got surprised a little bit by them. But by the time we got to Arkansas, we kind of felt like we kind of knew who they were and who we were. At least we thought we did. And they were probably the worst possible matchup for us. And, you know, again, they didn't have their lead. Their top two running backs are going to have to start a freshman. We're thinking, okay, that's great. That's great for us. Turns out that it wasn't great for us because, again, their strength is in the offensive line and in the running game. And even though you're changing a running back there, you still are running basically your base offense. And they just kind of lined up and ran all over us. And Taylen Green had a huge game. I think he was SEC Player of the Week. Braylon Russell gets his first start and runs for 175 yards. Probably would have run for 200 if he hadn't got hurt. But, again, early on, it looked like maybe we could make a game of it. They score after a turnover. You know, we turn it over. They go up 7-0. And then we respond. Davin Booth, 54-yard pass from Michael Van Buren. 7-7 game. There is life in Starkville. Well, then they kick a field goal, so we got a chance to get it back here and then get even or ahead. Instead, we don't do anything. Arkansas goes down and throws a touchdown pass to Luke Haas, who Ole Miss just announced he transferred to Ole Miss out for the year. Hate that for him. 17-7. Can't get a stop. Can't get off the field. They score again. It's 24-7. Kyle Ferry, field goal, makes it 24-10. And so you're thinking, okay, if we can get to the half, maybe we'll be okay here. But instead, we give up, again, just an absolute terrible, terrible scenario here. They get the ball back with just under 2 minutes left and go down the field and score to make it 31-10. They come out, kick a field goal, and their first possession is 34-10. And it's 41-10 before anybody has really gotten mad yet. But the game is over. I mean, the rest of the half is just basically an opportunity for us just, you know, just to kind of practice. The final score, 58-25, and this is an Arkansas program we've had a lot of success against. It'll be interesting to see how we handle it this year, especially going up there. And listen, they're not quite as good as they have been, but they're going to want to run the football. That's going to be a real test. Our second and final victory of the year comes against UMass, and even that in the beginning was not great. And maybe you've forgotten. We're down 10-0 after the first quarter. Have you forgotten that? And we couldn't stop them. I mean, we absolutely could not stop them. You know, they come out on their first possession and go 13 plays, 76 yards, take a 7-0 lead. We give it right back to them. They eat up 4 minutes. They basically eat up the quarter. It's 10-0. They are jacked. We respond, touchdown, make it 10-7. We come back, and Seydou scores a touchdown, a six-play, 97-yard drive to make it 14-10. And then from there, it was pretty much all Bulldogs. We jump up 21-10, 28-10. It's 35-10 after three. They kick a field goal, and then, you know, we tack on a field goal ourselves and a touchdown. We win at 45-20. But it was a very frustrating win. I mean, it's like we're just happy to get one in the win column, but it seemed to be a lot harder than it should have been. We go to Tennessee, and, again, I think Tennessee was really good, but I don't know if they were great. And I think, you know, they were 8-1 after this ball game with us. But, again, you know, State showed up to play. We didn't have the horses to finish the thing, but we came to play. We actually get down 14-0 in this game. We put together a very lengthy drive in the second quarter, eat up 7.5 minutes, to make it a 14-7 game. They end up kicking a field goal, and then, you know, we end up kind of mismanaging things and give them the opportunity for another field goal just before at the half to make it 20-7. They come out. First possession of third quarter, they get another field goal. It's a 16-point game. Then Johnny Daniels, nice run for him, makes it 23-14. We really couldn't get any closer. At that point, they just decided Dylan Sampson's going to win this game. Nico's knocked out of the game. They're just going to line up and run it. They end up beating us 33-14. Again, not a good matchup for us. Teams that can just go play power football, when you've got guys out there that are marginal SEC players manning in front, not great. The Missouri game, we talked about this one the other day, too. We previewed Missouri. We get up 3-0. The next thing you know, we're down 14-3. We counter back there with a pass from Van Buren and Jordan Mosley to make it 14-10. And then Missouri goes on a second quarter run here and basically puts this game away. Makes it 28-10. We kick a field goal. Way too many field goals. At least we've got Kyle Ferry. But, man, I'd like Kyle to kick a lot more extra points and field goals. We've got to do a better job maintaining possession. They get that field goal back, and then, you know, we score in the third to make an 11-point game. But you're still completely out of it, right? I mean, you're still two possessions down going to the fourth. The only scoring came in the fourth quarter, 39-20, and you remember they basically downed it to run out the clock. We went over the Ole Miss game last week, but it's just so interesting to me. You know, you're like me. You just hang on to anything for hope. You know what I mean? It's like, but when you look back in hindsight without the emotion of the moment, you begin to realize most of these games, even the games that we came back in, the edge is off. The Arizona State game, you don't think those guys at halftime were like, oh, this is done. You don't think when Georgia got up big, they thought, oh, this thing is done. So, we made a comeback to kind of make the games look a little more competitive at times. We got to make plays. I mean, big-time plays. When the game still matters. When it's even. And when you're ahead. You know, we didn't do any of that last year. We had a really tough time getting separation from anybody. And more times than not, we're just chasing the game. And again, kind of running down the schedule, and we'll kind of get into what's coming back. But as you guys are aware, we're going to be at Southern Miss August 30th. It's going to be a hot, hot, hot day. Go ahead and start hydrating now. 11 a.m. kick. We'll go down Friday night and cover a high school game and spend the night down there, and we'll be ready to roll. We'll probably get some breakfast at the Midtowner. Had to probably get there really early. But nevertheless, we're excited. Arizona State comes here, 6:30 kick. Again, the LED lights will make their long-awaited debut against Arizona State. Then Alcorn State in Davis-Wade Stadium. That's a 5 p.m. game. By the time we get in the second half, maybe we can use the lights. Northern Illinois, it's an afternoon game, 3:15. And so, again, we talk about getting the four non-conference games. It's a rarity for us, but we get them all up front. You have got to be no worse than 3-1 after this. If you can find a way to get 4-0, you have a reasonable chance to make a bowl game, but you're still going to need some help. Tennessee coming in here, I don't think Tennessee is going to be as good as they were last year. And, of course, Samson moves on. Nico moves on. Of course, had his day with the media today and said he really did it for family. That whole situation is still so stupid. Sometimes you get what you deserve. Yeah. But, yeah, Tennessee coming in here. If we got some juice, you know, and you got to wonder where Tennessee is going to be, you know. You're going to need some help, but you got a possibility there. You got to go to A&M. I think A&M is going to be a good team this year. You know, again, they're going to be a team that wants to run the football a lot. And we'll see how that works out for us. It's going to be a long trip. 2 weeks later, we go to Gainesville. They want to be a physical team too. And listen, more times than not, Florida is going to be the more talented team when we play them. So we're going to have to do some things schematically to kind of flex that secondary a little bit. Texas comes in. That could be an afternoon or an evening game. We don't know yet. It depends on how we're playing. We won't be 11 a.m. though. Then we go to Arkansas. That's an afternoon game. So you got a chance to go cover the game, get home, midnight or so. And then Georgia comes in here. And again, it's not like we're playing Georgia every time I turn around. That's going to be 11 a.m. kick. Then we go to Missouri, another lengthy road trip. At least you're spaced out a little bit. That's going to be an evening game at Missouri. And then, of course, Ole Miss here on Black Friday, 11 a.m. So right now we are assured of some 11 a.m. kicks. Three, right? Some other afternoon games, but only going to be Bulldog football for brunch three times unless something changes. But the windows have been set, so we feel like, you know, we're going to be afternoon, evening football the rest of the year. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We've stayed there for New Year's. We had a great time. It was a wonderful experience. It's much nicer than you could ever anticipate. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands, just off 182, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Six bedrooms, three baths. The full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area. There's so many great amenities there. You can Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will auto-populate. That'll give you the chance to look at all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. And that's just half of it. It's the fun that they can't advertise the fun. You got to trust me on this. It's just something about having everybody under one roof. It's the in-between moments that make the most, right? Whether you're coming here for a ball game, maybe you got some vacation time to spend and you just kind of want to do something cool, get everybody together. Get all the cousins together. Get all of the siblings together. Get mom and dad together and have a great time at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, when you Google, some booking options are going to pop up. It's at Airbnb, VRBO, but if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. Use promo code BSR10. BSR10, the number 10, gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the elite place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right, as we've mentioned several times on the show, we have had a lot of roster turnover since last year. That's part of the deal. And you know what? That is the nature of things in college athletics. We're not alone. We needed an influx of talent. We got some. Maybe not enough, but we'll see. But the reality of it is we got some key pieces back, but the majority of this is going to be newcomers. It's going to be people that we're going to be depending on to kind of make some things happen for us. You know, and again, it's so interesting how these websites, these school websites sometimes lag. It's just part of the deal, I guess, this time of year. Everybody's updating, I guess. But looking back at the numbers here, and of course, some of these guys are gone. Michael Van Buren led us in passing last year with 1,886 yards. He's now back up at LSU. We do get our leading rusher back, Davin Booth, 759 yards. And you guys know he kind of started picking it up around game four. Didn't have a great in the middle of the season. Kevin Coleman, now at Missouri, 932 yards on a 2-10 team. Isaac Smith, of course, 127 tackles. And again, there are a lot of casual fans that have a lot to say. Why is the safety making so many tackles? That's not a great thing. Well, he plays a lot of linebacker, too. So he's in the box a lot. So he's going to have a lot of safeties. And granted, we're on the field a lot, but it's not necessarily the matter of Isaac Smith playing over the top a lot. Hunter Washington led us with one pick. And that's a guy that Jeff Levy really likes as a leader. He's a great clubhouse guy. Blake Shapen is back as your starting quarterback. Again, Blake played basically 15 quarters last year. 74 completions, 108 attempts. 974 yards, a completion percentage of 68.5. Michael Van Buren was 54.7%. So about 14% more. Average depth of target favored Shapen by a yard and a half. He had 8 touchdowns against 1 pick. Van Buren, 11 touchdowns against 7. And again, there's going to be some up and down with young quarterbacks. Van Buren sacked also 27 times. Some of that's him for holding the ball too long. Some of that's just being a freshman and being somewhat inexperienced. And some of that's the fact that he had to, you know, kind of fight through the teeth of the schedule. Shapen had a quarterback rating of 166.9. Van Buren 125.3. And again, to be fair, Blake Shapen, not much SEC competition. We mentioned Davin Booth. And if there is one thing I think you can be excited about with this offense is the running game. And granted, it took us some time to kind of figure out some things on the offensive line, but Johnny Daniels was a nice companion piece. Guys, if we get 500 yards out of Johnny Daniels again this year, we had 540 last year. He averaged 5 yards a carry, had 4 touchdowns, and then, you know, had what, 220 yards less than Booth on 44 less carries. And so it's kind of a 1-2 punch last year with Daniels, a guy that not a lot of people talked about in preseason camp, but we got value out of him. And now you add Fluff to the mix and Xavier Gayton, obviously, you know, a guy that we feel like he's taking a jump. You know, a guy that was an athlete in high school. We made a running back out of him. He ran for 115 yards, but 72 of it on that one touchdown run that he had. But you're going to return the bulk of your rushing attack from last year. About 1,500 yards between those guys. Kevon Lee, of course, was the starter early on. He's no longer with the program. Creed Whittemore, no longer with the program. Shapen ran for 36 yards last year. Michael Van Buren, negative 12. And again, that's not all on Mike. I'm not just sitting here dumping on Mike. When we talked about Kevin Coleman moving on to Missouri, of course, he was outstanding last year. 74 catches, 932 yards, and 6 touchdowns. And he'll be doing that for the Tigers now. Jordan Mosley was your second leading receiver, 23 grabs, 405 yards. He averaged 17.6 yards a catch and 3 touchdowns, of course, the first one of the year. We need a little more from J-Mo this year. Kelly Akari, no longer with the program, 391 yards. Mario Craver, no longer with the program, 368 yards. Only had 17 catches. You know, some of our folks act like that, you know, Craver was Eric Molds, and he wasn't. Sidhu Traore is back at 34 grabs last year, which was second on the team. We expect him to take a nice jump this year. 361 yards. We found Davin Booth 13 times out of the backfield. Probably need to do more of that. Yeah. I think it's, you know, pretty apparent we do. Kyle Ferry quietly had a really good year last year. He was 38 of 39 in extra points, 10 of 12 on field goals, and one of those misses was more than 40 yards. But he also was 2 of 3 from 40 to 49. Everything under 40, he was pretty much automatic. He did miss one on a bad hold early in the year, but 68 points last year for Ferry. Very consistent kicker. We worked at the defensive numbers here. We talked about Isaac Smith, who was number one in the SEC. Stone Blanton was number two, with 124 tackles. And again, a lot of that's because you aren't getting a lot of resistance up front. Nick Mitchell, of course, has been a role player for us, but 80 tackles last year for him and a pick. Brandon Jennings, a guy that we, you know, we signed him to bring some pressure from the edge. He had 56 tackles last year, sack and a half. Hunter Washington back again. Brylon Lanier is back. I think Brylon got 53 tackles last year too. Played safety. It'll be interesting to see kind of how we use him this year. Bryce Pollock, no longer with the program, now at Texas Tech, had 53 tackles. And a lot of our – listen, really good player. Okay, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I had 7 PDs last year. But there were a lot of times, too, Bryce is getting beat underneath in coverage. Corner play has got to be better. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Trevion Williams, 33 tackles last year. We need him to make a jump for us. Zachary Tillman, a guy that really flashed last year, led the team with 3.5 sacks. We need him. And this is a guy, too. I remember when he was at Florence High School watching his film when he was playing safety before he outgrew the position. You're thinking, this is a guy that's a football player. Great family, too. Excited about them. Kelly Jones, 28 tackles from the cornerback position. A freak of an athlete, still kind of figuring it out as a corner. A'shaun Shepherd's a guy that we signed, too. You're not really expecting – much from him. We had 25 tackles from him. We're going to need him to take a jump this year, too. Deontay Anderson, a guy that we're expecting some big things from. He was a COVID All-American. Remember that? High school All-American. They had the big show there. We had him signed and held the announcement. 18 tackles last year. But, you know, again, you look at the numbers. Guys, we had 10 sacks. That's it. 10 sacks. Not even a sack a game. You know, and that's – you talk about secondary play. That's a big part of it, is the fact that we just simply couldn't get enough pressure on quarterbacks. You have to defend a lot longer. Your number two sack producer last year was Brandon Jennings with a sack and a half. That's it. Big Dink played one game, had one sack. I joked with him the other day. He goes, you know what, maybe we don't play in the season opener. It's 2 years in a row we've lost him. But, yeah, I mean, no appreciable, you know, difference between much of the players when it comes to rushing a quarterback. We talk about pass deflections, bright, you know, basically most of your guys that got hands on footballs are gone. Bryce is gone. Stone is gone. Corey Ellington. Isaac Smith had 3 PDs last year. He'll be back. But we had a real difficult time forcing turnovers last year. Everybody knows it wasn't a big surprise. But 7 interceptions last year for the Bulldogs and then 9 forced fumbles, and then we recovered 5 of those. So just 12 turnovers created by your Bulldog defense. And so, you know, that's the story of the season in many respects. And many of these players that made contributions, as moderate as they may be, have moved on. You know, and of course, you know, losing Van Buren, and to be fair to Mike, too, I mean, he was kind of forced into a situation before he was ready. But the kid obviously has some ability. maybe he'll grow up a little bit at LSU and compete for a starting job there next year after Nussmeier finishes up. But that's kind of where we sit, and I appreciate the tip and say, hey, Steve, let's talk a little more about the Bulldogs. We have. And next week, of course, we'll be getting into spring practice. We will have a media availability. I guess it's Tuesday. You will get all of the assistant coaches on Tuesday. And so we'll filter that out over this next few days. Probably have all that out by close of business on Thursday. And then we meet with Jeff Lebby following practice on Thursday to kind of recap the first day. So first official day of practice, the 31st. First media availability is the 29th. And then from time to time, we'll meet, you know, we'll get an opportunity to meet with players at later availabilities. But, 16 practices before the first day of class, which is August 20th. And 10 days later, we'll be getting ready to play a football game. So a lot of work to do between now and then. We're 5 weeks away from playing some college football, just over 5 weeks away. And we'll start seeing some football next week. Yeah, there'll be some NFL preseason type stuff. And before you know it, we'll have some college action too. You know, that's you know, the long summer is almost over. It feels like summer's flown by, but it's been so long. We've had so much going on. We haven't played a game where the Bulldogs, you know, kept score, you know, since we finished up down in Tallahassee. And I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of tired of that too, at least losing in a regional. You know, I want to play for things of significance. So that's where things stand as of now. Let's get out of here. I hope you guys have a great weekend. I'll be running the spot this weekend, so if you're in town, come by and say hello. And the bride is going to go meet the grandson. Yeah, that's when you run two businesses, you can't just drop everything and go. But you'll have the opportunity to go. If you want to come float, give us a call at 662-268-7601. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. I got some cool specials coming up, and we're excited for you to come be a part of that. And visit dutynoblebook.com. You can get all my sports titles there. Get signed copies in addition to the memoir, When the Bottom Falls. A lot of fun with all that stuff. Hey, but until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends and enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.